Blog Talk Radio.
Internet world, welcome to the Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom unto Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. So glad that you took some time out of your busy Monday morning to join me on the broadcast, The Cross in the Desert. Today is a very painful yet very important day for me and many, many thousands, perhaps millions of Iranians. It was 8 years ago today that my life was changed forever after watching a video. It was June 20th, 2009, just a few days after the Iranian presidential election protests had begun. Once again, Ahmadinejad had won a second term, and millions of Iranians were disgusted and outraged. They felt the election had been rigged. Their hopes and dreams for Mousavi, from the Green Movement, to be the next president of Iran had been completely obliterated. It was on this day, in June 20th, 2009, that a very young, beautiful Persian woman, quietly, peacefully protesting in the streets of Tehran, was shot and killed. And her death was filmed on a cell phone camera. Her death was seen all around the world, all the way to the White House and President Obama. But not only there, but in my living room here in Florissant, I watched the video of the death seen around the world, and my life was changed. It was through the video of Netta Sultan that this ministry, The Cross in the Desert, Speaking Hope and Freedom to Iran, was born that day. Something changed within my heart and mind. I've seen many, many videos before, but nothing quite as life-transforming as this video. As you watch this beautiful young Persian girl struggling, crying out for help as her friends tried to control the bleeding, she had been shot right in the heart. And within a few seconds, her life was over. But millions of Iranians identified with Netta and took up the cause, and they called her the Fallen Angel of Iran. When I saw that video that day, I knew I had to say something. It was the story of Maryam and Marzeah, two Iranian Christian women who were on death row just a few months later, that solidified my vision for Iran. The story of Maryam and Marzeah, the video of Netta, is what God used in my life to begin writing books, speaking out for Iranians. I want you to go back with me to that day. I want you to hear a report by a Canadian journalist reporting on this story just a few hours after it happened. And this is Netta's story as it happened 8 years ago during the violent presidential protests in Iran. Let's listen.
The attention this morning, too, is focused on this woman, Netta, shot and killed by Iranian police during a recent protest, and her final moments captured in images sent around the world are distilling the conflict. Good morning. Welcome to CBC News Morning for this Tuesday. She is being called the Fallen Angel of Freedom in Iran. Her name is Netta, and the video of her death on the streets of Tehran is putting a very human face on the post-election violence there. CBC News has spoken with a young man who's identified himself as her fiancé, and he gave us some details about his fallen bride-to-be. We pick up the story there with Nala Ayed, who's covering it from Beirut.
CBC News has spoken to a man who claims to be Netta's fiancé. His name is Caspian Makan. He told us a few things about her. He said she was 26 years old. She had lots of friends. She was very caring and helpful. And she apparently also had dreams of coming to Canada. As you can see in the pictures, she does seem fairly liberal. She's not always wearing hijab. And some reports have said that she actually recently gave up religious lessons and took up piano lessons instead. And in fact, she was with her music teacher, this is what Caspian tells us, when the incident happened. Her fiancé also pointed out that she is not aligned to any of the parties to this dispute in Iran, not to Mousavi, the reformist, or Ahmadinejad, the current president, but was just someone who believed in democracy and basic rights and freedoms. In fact, he says that she was actually just stuck in traffic near this protest there and actually got out of the car purely to take a break or a breather, and that wasn't she wasn't actually there to protest. And he said, in fact, that the two of them had argued about her being out during all this turbulence and had asked her to stay home to be safe. Her response apparently was that if a bullet were to hit her in the heart and kill her, it doesn't matter because as far as he's concerned, he says, she said that everyone has a purpose, and her purpose was freedom. Now, at the end of the conversation, he was offered condolences, but he said that he would not, she would not have wanted it that way, that her spirit was a happy one, and that she would not have wanted people to be sad about her death.
Nala, in the past 24 hours, she has really become the face of the Iran uprising. Give me a sense of the effect that the video of Netta's death is having on the people and on the protest there.
Well, Heather, she really has become a symbol for Iranians who believe that the crackdown against the protest has been unjust. So it has touched a nerve among them. It's really focused the anger there. If you look at some of the websites that have been keeping us informed about what's going on there, about the emotions and about the events, she really has become kind of, the video has become a rallying cry for these people. She's been called the Fallen Angel of Freedom. And as you'd see today, one of the defeated candidates, as you mentioned, Karoubi, is now calling in protesters to mourn her and others who were killed in the protests. This is now planned for Thursday. So I would think that the growing opposition has been sort of emboldened by her killing, by this video, because it really appears that it is a clear example of a killing of an innocent bystander. Of course, as you know, Iran also has a very strong martyr culture, so she has become an icon, a rallying cry for those demanding change in the country. It's touched the nerve, not only inside Iran, but outside Iran. If you look at some of the websites that show her video, there's a question that's often being asked by Iranians and non-Iranians saying, how could an innocent bystander like this be killed in this way? What kind of government would allow such a tragedy to happen?
That is Nala Ayed from Beirut this morning, beginning our coverage, and there is more to come on the story, too, in the...
very insightful story about Netta Sultan that aired just a few hours after her death was broadcast up on YouTube and seen by millions all over the world exactly 8 years ago. You know, June 20th has become International Netta Day. Her fiancé, Caspian McCann, who is my Facebook friend, every year pays tribute to his fiancé. And millions of us join in mourning her passing and realizing that what she endured and the bullet that struck her in the heart, prophetically, she even said before she went out, if that were to happen, I'd do it for the cause of freedom. And wow, this happened almost prophetically, as Netta had said it would. But she did not want all of this attention, but millions of Iranians have identified with her as the fallen angel of freedom for Iran. I know it had a big impact on me. It was a year after this event that HBO put together a huge special for Netta, a strong, positive, up-close and personal documentary about Netta, who she was, what she stood for, and of course the video that changed everyone's life. I want you to hear this broadcast from CNN a year after the tragedy. We're going to get some more details on who Netta was in this little soundbite. Let's listen.
Fareed Zakaria GPS, CNN Sunday morning, 10 Eastern and Pacific.
And now for our What in the World segment. It was the death seen and heard around the world. Because of modern technology, hers was one of the most widely witnessed deaths in all of human history. Netta Aga Sultan's murder galvanized a revolution, both within Iran and without. That much is known. But who was Netta, and what led her to that terrible moment? A fascinating new HBO documentary called For Netta explores those very questions. In the film, for the first time, we hear Neda's mother speak.
From the age of 3, she never accepted control. She fought with the school authorities not to wear it, and she won that battle.
But though Netta continued to fight for her rights throughout her life, she was not solely political. Her family says she loved to dance, always had a smile, and had a wanderlust, which led to a job as a tour guide in Turkey. But all of that was put on hold a year ago when everything changed in Iran. A year ago today, that's when Iran erupted. And Netta was there from the start. Her mother joined her at one of the protests, and she recalls an encounter that she and Netta had there. It was with some female members of the Basij, Iran's pro-regime paramilitary.
Very politely, one of these women asked Netta, "Dear, please don't come out looking so beautiful." Netta smiled with her beautiful teeth and said, "Am I beautiful?" And they said, "You are very, very lovely. Do us a favor and don't come out, because the Basij men target beautiful girls. And they will shoot you."
8 days after the elections, tensions were reaching a peak, as were arrests, beatings, and killings. Neda's parents begged her not to go out. Her answer, "If I don't go out, who will?" So she went. Her mother reached her by phone that afternoon.
I pleaded with her to come back home. She said, "Mom, I will. Don't worry."
But of course, she didn't. A doctor standing nearby noticed her.
I was really looking at her with admiration, because she was a woman, a young woman, so courageous. I was dying out of fear out there, and she was just moving around, shouting, and that was why I noticed her. Then the anti-riot police took up their batons and just rushed towards the people, so people just scattered.
And in the chaos that ensued, shots rang out.
And then we hear the blast. I turned back, looked at Netta, who was standing about a meter away from me, and I saw her looking up in astonishment, in surprise at the blood that was gushing out of her chest, and I ran towards her. From my impression, she was shot in her aorta. It's the major blood vessel coming out of the heart. No one could save her.
Iran has never charged anyone in Neda's murder. Instead, the regime has accused everyone from the CIA to the BBC of killing her. And the regime apparently doesn't want people to see this HBO documentary. When the Voice of America tried to beam the film into Iran earlier this month, they received many complaints, some people saying their signal had been jammed, others saying that their electricity had been cut off during the airing. Many brave people inside and outside Iran continue to try to bring this film to the Iranian people. For the rest of you, watching it will be easier. For Neda airs Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on HBO. If you live outside the U.S., check your listings or go to HBO.com. Don't miss it.
An incredible documentary talking about who Neda was, what she stood for, and of course how her death changed the culture of Iran forever, like it changed my life. I want to read to you from my book, The Cross in the Desert, Speaking Hope and Freedom to Iran. This is the blog I wrote a few years ago called Remembering Neda, the Angel of Iran, and I would like to read it to you word for word. You are neither dead nor will you die. You will always remain alive. You have eternal existence. You are the voice of the people of Iran. Simi Behabini, Iran's national poet. On June 20th, 2009, the world witnessed the gruesome death of a young Iranian through a cell phone video. The video graphically showed a beautiful young woman lying on her back, bleeding in an alleyway in Tehran, surrounded by her friends who were desperately trying to save her life. Despite their heroic efforts, she tragically died after being fatally shot in the chest by a Basiji officer nearby. Through a two-minute video, the world was introduced to a young Iranian woman named Neda Sultan, who had joined thousands of other protesters in peacefully demonstrating the results of a corrupt presidential election in Iran. The intense and graphic video was the turning point in my life. It had a dramatic effect on me, as it did the millions of others who watched it. I was in tears watching Neda gasping for life with her eyes wide open in fear. Something inside of me snapped as I watched it. I immediately felt a calling to speak out for Iranians. I was outraged that their basic fundamental right to protest and disagree was being met with such violent opposition by an oppressive government. I was astonished to later discover that Neda's name means calling. It was then that I realized that God was using this video as a calling for me to be a voice for Iranians. Now, 5 years later, I have authored more than 8 books and written several blogs about the plight of Iranians for peace and freedom in their own country. One of these books, The Rose of Nowruz, Dreams of Hope and Freedom, is dedicated to Neda for her courage and conviction to be a voice for her people. I have been blessed to become a friend of Neda's fiancé, Caspian McCann, a human rights advocate living in Canada, and have shared my book with him. Caspian has dedicated his life to keeping Neda's dream for a free Iran alive through postings, pictures, and articles on his webpage. The Rose of Nowruz is now being read on PDF files by my dear Iranian friends and giving them hope that one day a free Iran will be more than just a dream. In my book, Behera, a concert violinist, witnesses the Ghastir Shah, that is the morality police, beating a woman outside of her apartment because she wasn't wearing her hijab properly in public. It was this event and Behera's life that motivated her to become an activist and voice for her friends suffering under a corrupt regime. There is a special song in my book written by Behera, a song dedicated to the day when Iranians can once again walk down the streets of Tehran without fear. As we remember Neda today, I want to share this song with you. They are words of hope, dedicated to a woman who, through her tragic sacrifice, has illuminated the darkness of Iran with an eternal spirit of courage and freedom. There is a rose that was silenced, that was crushed, but it will grow again. The sun will shine again. You gave us hope, gave us freedom, gave us life. Your life will never end. the rose will live again. The sun is going to shine again. The rose is going to live again. Give me wings of freedom so I can fly. I want to fly high. I want to soar. Give me wings of freedom or let me die. I want to kiss the sky. I want to soar. I want to share with you the perfect, appropriate song written by Sarah McLachlan. It's a song you probably know. It's entitled Angel, but I think it fits appropriately with who Netta was. Let's listen right now on The Cross in the Desert.
Spend all your time waiting for that second chance, for a break that would make it okay. There's always some reason to feel not good enough, and it's hard at the end of the day. I need some distraction.
such a beautiful song, a composition that is perfect and appropriate for Neda Sultan, the fallen angel of Iran. Tomorrow is a very special day for all of us, especially me. June 20th is not only the anniversary of Neda's death, but it's also World Refugee Day. And this is at the heart of what I do here on the Cross in the Desert. I just recently finished a book about my dear friend Maral. It's called Finding Hope and a Future, Maral's Journey to Freedom. And she was a refugee. She left Iran in 2015. And after 2 months of traveling in a vigorous trail with other refugees, she finally successfully made it to Germany. And this book is about her journey from Iran to Germany. Refugees have such a special place in my heart. And my dear friend Paymaneh Sabet is an Iranian refugee. She's a journalist, and she's a filmmaker, and she's many things, a very talented young woman. And she is living in Malaysia. This is an Islamic-dominated country, waiting for the right interview so that she can leave Malaysia and find a new home of hope and freedom. And Paymaneh has been so diligent to write human rights stories for my broadcast. And I told her, please write something more about refugees. And today, she has blessed me with her latest story in tribute to all of the refugees all over the world on World Refugee Day. I want you to hear her story. It's her experiences with other refugees and praying for them to find hope and freedom. And so I'm going to read it word for word. I want you to hear it from my dear friend Paymaneh. During the years I have been a refugee, spending all my time in a room, except for the times in the meeting hall and home meetings, the Lord has sent a lot of Iranian refugees to me through the virtual world. I know that I have been chosen to preach the gospel to them and fight with the enemy as a 24-hour on-duty soldier of God, and I've tried to do my best. I have seen many broken people who are struggling with living issues on one hand, and the stress and pressure for the unknown future and uncertainty about the UNHCR or immigration offices, fear of deportation, prison, and execution on the other hand. And it has made the souls of a lot of refugees paralyzed and made them turn to the Lord and call upon His name. I am not an exception. I have been going through tribulations too. But the Lord has His own ways to lift me up and help me collect my broken parts once again and rebuild myself. No matter what situation I am in, I have tried to stand strong, to lift up others with the promising word of God, as others lift up my spirit with His word. I have to be an example of who God's child is and express Christ to them. My brokenness is never expressed in front of others, but in the room and in my loneliness, because I have to direct them to the Lord as He is the great shepherd, a real father, and He's faithful to them. As He directly lifts me up any time I cry out to Him or send the right person to lift me up, I even know the reason for breaking and shaking, as I have many times reached the point that I have absolutely no one in the world but God. Since 2013, I have had no other way but to unbelievingly being forced to open a file in the United Nations HCR in my depression. Until now, I have learned many lessons. Many times I witnessed the fire in their life, as well as how some fired their spirit and fanned the fire. I witnessed how God has been a cloud to protect and cover refugees in the strong wind blowing in their life like a storm. How He showed His plans and the purpose of putting them in the hard situation as refugees. I've witnessed how He has played the role of a great father. And I also saw the beautiful rainbow in their lives. I've failed many times, and He's helped me stand up again and stay strong once again. I saw an old man of God as a refugee who has had a hard time for over 6 years in Europe. But all this time, he was faithfully serving God, working for charities in spite of being rejected. But he stood firm in the Lord, and the Lord has blessed him. He is a good testimony. I met a refugee who was rejected by the immigration office after many years and has been living secretly, still serving the church, and tries to be faithful to the Lord. I got to directly know the family of a late pastor in Thailand. The father of the family passed away after they were rejected. The mother is sick and the son has no food to eat or to feed. Last week, an Iranian refugee passed away here in Malaysia because of a mosquito bite. He was in a coma for many days. I got to know the friends of a young refugee girl who committed suicide in Turkey. I got to know a 40-year-old Sunni man in Europe who is depressed and tired of being a refugee only after 9 months. I saw a young Iranian secular ex-prisoner man who was rejected after being in a difficult situation in Indonesia. He was so hungry and homeless that he went to the immigration office and asked them to imprison him, hoping that then he would have shelter and food to eat. Now, after 4 years, he has once again been rejected. But the good aspect of this situation is that he has turned his life over to the Lord, and his only hope is in Jesus. He has learned to trust the Lord. As I told him, when man ends, God begins to start his work in his life. He needs many prayers. But these are not the only ones I've witnessed. I have met many blessed people, too. I have seen how the Lord has worked in Marnusha's life, in Maral's life. I saw miracles in Alexander, Miriam, and their son's life. And I saw Christ in the tears of their little son when they heard they were accepted after being rejected so many times. I was filled with joy when that child said, "My Christ has answered my prayers." Christ never leaves us alone and never leaves our prayers unanswered. I saw how Maral, my Iranian friend, got stronger in faith after the many tribulations in her life. I also saw how the Lord worked in Sarah's life, blessed her through her sickness, and then brought her a life partner, her husband, who is also another refugee. While Sarah is physically sick and weak, he takes care of her. She demonstrates a pattern of faith and is always saying, "Our Lord is faithful, Christ is alive." Yes, though we are all broken in faith, Christ is still the strength of us. He loves every one of us and blesses each of us in his own way. I don't want to say Happy Refugee Day, as being a refugee is not a good thing. But I want to say that there is a purpose behind the life of a refugee. And there is a plan for real refugees who have been put in this situation by the Lord. We need to find that purpose and the plan that is designated for each of us. Many people have been refugees and now have been exposed to the gospel and now know the Lord. Many like me have been refugees to leave their hidden place and preach the gospel after being marked by this regime. Many refugees are strong in faith, and many are a living testimony of God. You are right to break, to be torn, and to be paralyzed. But please, after that, stand up, strengthen others, and ask the Lord to take care of you. This is from the heart of my dear friend Payman A., who's just writing what's in her heart. And in this particular story, she is explaining the stories of other refugees, the pain, the sorrow, the disappointment, the brokenness. And she says the one thing that makes all of the difference in the life of these refugees, including my own life, is my undying faith in Jesus. He is the rock and the foundation of my life. There are storms, there are bitter trials, but if you know Jesus, the foundation remains strong through any storm, in any experience that you may encounter. And this is appropriate that Payman A. writes this for World Refugee Day, because right now, for the next 20 minutes, I want to take the time to continue reading my book about my dear friend Maral, who was part of a refugee group when she left Iran to go to Germany. And the name of the book is Finding Hope and a Future, Maral's Journey to Freedom. I want you to hear this beautiful stream of music as an introduction, and when that's finished, I will begin reading my book, Finding Hope in a Future. I will see you in just 2 minutes. beautiful composition called Winds of Hope. I am reading to you from my newest book, Finding Hope and a Future, Maral's Journey to Freedom. And we are in the middle of Chapter 7, and we will begin this story. Maral is on her way to Athens, Greece, with other refugees. Maral now had a renewed sense of purpose. Courage and hope once again had taken root in her soul. Breaking camp on Monday, the refugee group boarded a cargo ship that took them to the city of Athens. The food and shelter in Athens was much better, but Maral was still suffering with a respiratory infection. After 3 days, Maral and Parham once again boarded a bus and traveled for 7 hours until they reached the border of Macedonia. Macedonia is a country in the Balkan Peninsula of Southeast Europe, bordering Serbia to the north and Albania to the west. The refugee group would now begin a long and grueling trek on foot crossing the border. It was Yalta night, December 21st, when the crossing began. Maral was gripped by special memories of what she did with her family on the beginning of the winter solstice, the longest night of the year. Long before Islam invaded Iran, when Zoroastrianism was the chief religion, Persians celebrated the arrival of winter with the renewal of the sun and the victory of light over darkness. Maral remembered the precious moments of staying up all night with her family and celebrating with a feast of pomegranates, dried nuts, and delicious watermelons. After crossing the border at night, Maral and Parham's bodies ached from the long walking on the rocky trails in and out of forests. Their Pakistani guard urged them to walk swiftly in case the police were nearby. If the police spotted them, they would all surely be arrested as illegal immigrants and deported back to Iran. After 12 hours of continuous walking, the guide instructed the group to take a rest along the side of the road. It was now 6 a.m. The change in temperatures was affecting the health of everyone. They had been exposed to cold and damp temperatures, but now in Macedonia, the weather was extremely hot, especially during the day. The group slept on the cold, wet grass at night. Maral shared her sleeping bag with the other refugees. There was very little food and water, and the walking was taking a toll on everyone's shoes. After 2 days of rigorous walking in suffocating hot temperatures, the refugee group was transported by jeeps into Serbia. They bid their farewells to the Pakistani guide. They departed the jeeps and found shelter in a very dirty storage garage building just over the border in Serbia. The conditions inside the garage were deplorable, but the building served as a shelter from the oppressive rays of the sun. For a few hours, Maral and Parham rested and were treated to sandwiches and hamburgers by their new guides. The next day, the grueling walk in the heat began once again. They walked swiftly through the jungles and woods of Serbia, crossing dangerous rivers in a certain direction to avoid being spotted by the police. 12 hours later, late at night, the group halted and found shelter underneath a bridge. Early the next morning, the guides awakened the refugees and urged them to assemble immediately to await the arrival of the jeeps. Maral and Parham, exhausted from the night before, quickly threw on their clothes, which were ragged and dirty from the many miles of walking, and followed the group to an open field. As the jeeps began arriving, the guide quickly pushed them into the jeeps. During the confusion, Parham was separated from Maral, and she heard him yelling for her as he was being driven away. Maral was devastated as she watched her son ride away without her in one of the jeeps. She was left behind with two Iranian men as they waited for the arrival of the next jeeps. Panic-stricken and filled with fear, Maral anxiously waited for over an hour until a jeep finally arrived. She begged the driver to take her to Belgrade, the capital of Serbia, so that she could meet with the police and find her son again. The Iranian man who had accompanied her in the jeep called his friend Farshad, who was already at the refugee camp, and discovered that Parham had arrived safely. Maral was overwhelmed with joy and thanked God for once again answering their desperate prayers. At the camp, Parham was filled with anxiety and crying that he had lost his mother. Farshad assured him that he would see her very soon again. Arriving at the refugee camp 3 hours later, Maral caught a glimpse of her son in dirty, ragged clothes and a face full of tears. She ran towards him and threw her arms around him. They hugged each other and cried tears of joy, grateful for being reunited. The refugee camp in Belgrade was a 10-story building and a processing center. Maral and Parham were both fingerprinted and interviewed by officers. The respiratory infection was not getting any better, and she still had no access to doctors or medication. Maral's clothes and shoes were soiled and dirty from the long, hot walk in the jungles of Macedonia. After a 2-day rest, the group once again broke camp and continued on their journey to Germany. Maral found a water fountain at the Afghan bank waiting for the bus. It was cold in the evening in Serbia, and she was tired, hungry, and discouraged once again. Wearing a pair of wet socks from the water fountain, Maral began washing her face and hands. As she was brushing her hair, a young Serbian man walked up to her and offered to take them to a secondhand store and buy them some clothes. Maral excitedly agreed to the man's offer and followed him down the street. While in the shoe store, Maral found some shirts, blouses, shoes, and jeans, but was unable to find the right size shoes for Parham. She was reluctant to allow the man to purchase the clothes because she felt that it was taking advantage of his kindness. The Serbian man insisted on helping her, and Maral thanked him for his kindness. Once again, God was providing everything that Maral and Parham needed. Her faith had been rejuvenated by the man's kindness, and Maral began realizing that God would be faithful to keep his promise to her. This is a book that has transformed my life in so many ways. And I was just able in the last couple of weeks to send Maral copies of the book to her in Germany. And she's proudly holding copies of the book up to a camera, and I've posted them on my page so that you can get a sense of what is going on in her life. And many of my Iranian friends are just so anxious to read her story. We are now at the end of chapter 7, and a week from today I will begin reading the final two chapters in the book, 8 through 10, and so I will definitely return to reading my book. I want to spend these last minutes reading to you an article from my dear friend Shabnam Asadali. She is a human rights activist living in Canada. And she was in prison, in Evin prison, just a year after the revolution in Iran. She spent 18 grueling months as a 15-year-old teenager in prison, and it changed her life forever. Through this difficult experience, she's become a voice of human rights, especially to Iranians. And she is now writing for the Times of Israel. And she has written articles addressing the situation in Canada with Trudeau as the prime minister. He is basically Islamicizing Canada through his liberal policies. And recently she has written an article called Canada and the Western Democratic World Must Hold Iran Accountable. And she continues to speak out for Iranians under the oppressive regime of this government. I want to read to you word for word Shabnam's article. The Islamic Republic is a state sponsor of terrorism. That's why Canada shut down the Iranian embassy in Ottawa in September 2012. However, attention must be drawn to some of the more particularly inhumane and nefarious activities of the Iranian regime. The Islamic Republic started with an officially approved massacre of all sorts of dissidents, along with the functionaries of the former monarchy, thousands of revolutionaries whose views differed from that of the Islamic Republic were either hanged or shot dead after sham trials or even without them. Later, the Islamic constitution that was established in Iran effectively brought a fundamentalist Islamic regime to power, which systematically suppressed all other voices and social political constitutionaries like liberals, socialists, women, and religious and ethnic minorities. This has led to a vicious process of violation of human rights in Iran since the establishment of the Islamic regime, a process that still vigorously continues even after the presumably moderate President Hassan Rouhani took office. In truth, the violation of human rights in Iran has skyrocketed since Rouhani became president in 2013. Over 3,000 Iranians have been hanged under this moderate president's watch, the largest number of executions in Iran in the past 25 years. Indeed, the execution spree in the first half of 2015 was not overlooked by Amnesty International, which noted that, quote, death sentences in Iran are particularly disturbing because they are invariably imposed by courts that are completely lacking in independence and impartiality, end quote. Amnesty International also added, quote, death sentences are imposed either for vaguely worded or overly broad offenses or acts that should not be criminalized at all, let alone attract the death penalty. Trials in Iran are deeply flawed. Detainees are often denied access to lawyers in the investigative stage, and there are inadequate procedures for appeal, pardon, and commutation. As a result, Iran has become the top country committing executions per capita under Rouhani's watch. One of the legal pretexts of the Islamic regime for executing dissidents is the common charge of mubara, our enmity towards gods, which is routinely used against all sorts of human rights activists and dissidents, and which invariably receives the death penalty, sometimes administered in public by mass hangings on cranes, although even stoning is not ruled out legally. Many of those hanged take up to 20 minutes to die slowly and painfully from strangulation. The victims' bodies are typically left hanging for some time before being removed as a way of intimidating the public into silence. Many of those who are executed from minority communities, such as the Azawab Arab Iranians, who are predominantly Shia, as well as Kurdish and Balucha Sunnis. The targeting of minorities has not changed since Rouhani's assuming office. Over the past decade, of the Awazi Arab political prisoners, ranging from poets and teachers to bloggers and human rights activists, have been executed on trumped-up charges in kangaroo courts. Rather than finding reasonable evidence for the committing of a crime, judges rely on confessions, which have been extracted from the accused through physical and psychological torture. Meanwhile, friends and relatives of the accused are kept in the dark, often not informed of where their loved ones have been imprisoned, executed, or even buried. Again, nothing has improved under Rouhani. Never mind that Iran is one of the few countries that continue to execute juvenile offenders, where according to the UN, at least 160 are languishing on death row for crimes committed under the age of 18. The number of child offenders executed in 2014 through 15 under Rouhani's watch is higher than at any time during the past 5 years. According to an Amnesty International report released just a few days ago, Iran's authorities have sought to whitewash their continuing violations of children's rights and deflect criticism of their appalling record as one of the world's last executioners of juvenile offenders. Such kind of reports, however, have failed to prevent Rouhani from receiving a warm welcome on his European tour, as top politicians, as well as the Pope, were eager to meet him. Surprisingly, these days, even the prominent opposition voices in the West, who often complain about their own government's disregard of human rights, don't see a necessity to voice any substantial criticism against the abuses of human rights by the regime of Iran. The reason why is because much of the world wants to do business with the Iranian regime, and they don't want any fuss over rather trivial things such as the violation of human rights by that criminal regime. Indeed, it seems that the rush to conclude a nuclear deal of Iran has twisted and bound all tongues in the West. How can we possibly improve the conditions of human rights in Iran by holding the Iran regime accountable when, At the same time, the Liberal government of Canada, as well as other governments around the world, implicitly legitimized this regime's violation of human rights by reestablishing diplomatic relationships with it. That is an eye-opening, educational, thought-provoking article written by my dear friend Shabnam Assadli, and she is an Iranian-Canadian human rights activist. She is a prolific writer, has won many awards as a human rights activist, and this latest article can be found in the Times of Israel, which she writes for now. And it is an article that once again shows through many facts, many good sources, that Hassan Rouhani, who has now been reelected as president of Iran, that there is no such thing as moderate about him. I hear many times, well, he is a moderate. He has to deal with the hardline people. He's in this life and death struggle. You can't blame him. But the facts are the facts. Under Rouhani's watch, more than 3,000 Iranians have met their death. Executions have spiked under Rouhani. There have been no improvements to the human rights of Iranians. And yet, the amazing thing is that he was reelected just a few weeks ago. I know I have many Iranian friends that feel like, well, in this past election, his opponent was a horrible person. And so we had to vote for the lesser of two evils. You've heard this argument before. But every time an Iranian votes, that once again legitimizes this regime in Iran. There are many of my Iranian friends who boycott the election, who refuse to vote, but there's not enough of them. I could say in one way that many Iranians vote out of fear of maybe losing their government benefits or somehow being called to account for not voting. But anyone that knows anything about Iran knows that there is no democratic election in Iran. The candidate must be approved by the Guardian Council, must be approved by the supreme leader. In fact, the president is nothing more than a puppet. The supreme leader was and always will have the final say in Iran. And so under Rouhani's watch, nothing has improved. But like Shabnam points out, he is still recognized and applauded by many world leaders, even the Pope. You see, his smile betrays what really is going on inside of him. Rouhani was part of the Revolutionary Guard's efforts back in the 1990s in an attack in South America against a Jewish center. He is responsible for many of the deaths of the student uprising in the 1997 student uprising in Iran. He has blood on his hands. And so as Shabnam points out in this article, Canada and the Western world must hold Iran accountable and stand up for the rights of Iranians all over the world. Today on the Cross in the Desert, I have taken us back to the bloody presidential election protests of 2009, and we remembered Neda together on this day. And as a young Iranian woman who was viciously killed during a peaceful protest, she still remains that fallen angel of Iran. And I've read to you today about World Refugee Day. I've read to you from my book today to remind you that our voices can never be silent when it comes to the oppression of Iranians. Our voices can never be silent when it comes to this regime and how they are betraying the people of Iran through their policies and human rights violations. And so today, I hope that you will remember my dear Iranian friends in prayer. God bless you. I will see you again on Thursday for another episode of The Cross in the Desert.
need